Sendingen er sponset av Coop. Litt ditt.
Hjertelig velkommen til en ny episode av podcasten FEM Fotball. Det har skjedd mye greier rundt start de siste dagene, Daniel. Vi var jo i Stavanger på fredag og så treningskampen mellom Viking og Start. Det endte jo med et 0-4-tap, men dagen før den kampen så kom jo også nyheten om at Mick Priest gir seg som sportssjef i Start. Og han er vår gjest i podcasten i dag.
Welcome, Mick.
Good morning.
You surprised us all on Friday or Thursday?
Yeah. It was a decision that has been coming in my own mind, at the back of my mind, and just felt so there can be some closure and the club can move forward to a bright future again. It was just time to make the decision, just on a personal reason, you know, and come clean rather than walking around with heavy weights on my shoulders and, you know, and the club not knowing what's going on. I made the decision that I will leave the club at the end of May. You know, it was conversations I had with Vibeke, conversations with Hazard, and we just felt that was a natural timing coming up to the break of the World Cup and everything. And I can be in place to help with the handover and make sure my paperwork's all up to date.
But how was it for you to make that final decision?
Really tough, because I think everybody knows how much I think about the club, you know, and why I came back. So it was really tough, but I'd had some time at home over Christmas, especially. Had a month away and reflecting on things. And it just felt right, because I think, like in anything in life, the minute you start to have some doubts, then, you know, maybe it's not the right place to be.
Oh, because you're in the middle of everything in the club, the sporting, development of the youth department and everything. So, like you say, if you drop,
yeah,
the motivation is not like 100%. It's one of the most important jobs in the club, so you have to be...
Yeah, I think there was everything, Daniel. I think I've poured my heart and soul into it. Even prior to joining, when I was at Brentford, I was doing my day job at Brentford. And then adding hours on to make sure I understood the squad at Start at the same time in readiness. So it's been, I know it looks like it's been sort of 16, 17, 18 months, whatever it is, but it's been close to 24 months non-stop, you know, and I think when you're away from home, anybody who's worked away from home, you know, home is there, you know, and it's always at the back of your mind, you know, and so I think, yeah, maybe there's a whole lot that I could probably never, ever put into words as to the actual reason why, the one specific. It's just an accumulation of different feelings.
And I've known you since 2017.
Yeah.
And I also know that after you left, that we've kept in touch, and you kept in touch with a lot of people in this city. So it's not just 24 months either. No. It's been a thing that you've wanted to do for several years.
Yeah, it's... Like I said, there's so many different emotions, and time will tell whether I've made the right decision. You know, the one thing that's certain is that the club will move forward. The club will still be there after we're long gone, all of us. You know, and that's so. And I think for me, the big tough decision was, you know, listen, I love the city, I love the club, love the people I've met, but it's still not home. You know, and that's the ultimate reason, really, in the back of my mind is, you know, personally, you know, it just felt right, and there was some doubts creeping in.
And when you are speaking about home, to make it clear for our listeners, it's Manchester, right? Because that's where your family lives as well.
Yeah, we're just outside Manchester, Oldham, so about 8 miles from the city centre, so 12 kilometres or so. So yeah, so that's home. And I was going, part of the job, the club were kind enough to allow me to go back every 6 weeks to work, you know, and do a week working from home, just because I've got my son, my wife, my dog, and mum and dad are still there, brother, you know, so there's, and it was always a challenge, because I think I'd like to think that anybody who's known me while I've worked at the club knows that they've got 100% of me. And, yeah, and I think I've committed myself totally to the club, and maybe at the expense of myself as well. You know, even when I went home, you know, it was work, work, work. You know, no time for anybody else really, which didn't feel right either. So there's lots of reasons, but none of them are anything to do with the club or anything other than myself.
Because you have felt that the cooperation with Azar Karadas, Vibeke Johannesson, Sveinung Hedding Valvik before her and the board have been good.
Yeah, everybody's been fantastic support. Sveinung really welcomed me. You know, he helped me a lot when I first joined. You know, Azar and I have always got on well. It was something maybe I didn't want us to get on as well, but he's such a good guy, you know, because I always wanted a bit of a distance just in case things were going wrong, and you have to have those tough conversations. But fortunately, we've been able to challenge each other and always walk out of the room in a good mood with each other. You know, so the any conversations we've had have always been really strong. And then Vibeke has come in and she's doing, so far, a great job, you know, structuring the place, helping things build on, and hopefully, you know, listen, I sit in a chair. It's called the chair of the sporting chief, the sporting director. The chair will still be there. You know, the club will move forwards. Of that, I've got no doubts. So, personal relationships are all great. You know, I certainly don't want anybody to think there's been a falling out. You know, it's far from that. You know, there's, for example, I mean, I know questions will be asked because that's your jobs, and that's, people want to speculate and cause mischief, and, you know, nothing could be further from the truth.
That's why you are here, to end the speculations.
Well, if anybody wanted to question whether Azar and I have fallen out, they should have seen me 2 weeks ago at the airport in a blizzard waiting for him at 10 o'clock at night. You know, if there's a fallout, I'm not doing that, that's for sure. So, no, we've had a really, really good relationship, become good friends, you know, and so that's, again, tough, you know, because I've been at clubs where in the past, and everybody keeps themselves at a distance because at some point, you know, either somebody's going to leave in a positive way or leave because they're not doing the job. But, you know, we went beyond that. We've got a good friendship, you know, and hopefully that'll continue.
And you have confirmed that you will stay until the end of May, but now the process, of course, will begin to find the next sporting director, and you will in some ways be involved in that process. And I just want to ask you, for the next person coming in, what kind of qualities do you think it's important to have if you want to be the sporting director of a club like Start?
I think you've got to, number one, you've got to love the game. You know, I think you've got to be prepared to give it everything you've got. The club's in a nice position where it's ready to launch. I think, you know, we've got to a certain point, and now I think there's a kick on needed and ready to go. I think the person, enthusiasm, knowledge of football, obviously. There'll be certain criteria that the club will put on the applicants, but they're the obvious ones, knowing Norwegian football, knowing recruitment, understanding first team football, liking academy football, believing in youth, you know, the whole thing that probably every sporting director in Norway is expected to do.
And then if you look at yourself now, after 18 months, going home, back home again, we know that there is a lot of transitions in football, like players in, players out, coaches in, coaches out. But do you see the sporting, because you signed for 5 years.
Yeah.
So do you see that as a more of a long-term role in if the perfect thing for the club? Do you see the next guy coming in, staying for a long amount of time? And why do you think that is important,
I mean, I signed for 5 years. There was a three-year break. So there was always that potential, a three-year break clause. But, no, I think in the position, you've got to have the belief in the long term. You know, not just a coach's job is to prepare for the now. The sporting director, I believe, is to prepare for the future, which is why we've backed the academy so heavily. You know, I think last year the easy thing for the board and the investors to do was to walk away from the academy when we were struggling with the three-star classification. There was absolutely no way we were getting it, you know, because we were understaffed, under-budgeted. But we had some good conversations and we decided that, rightfully so, a healthy academy means a healthy club. And so we stuck with the academy. So I think that's something that if I was to give input, it would be somebody who is really passionate about youth development. But ultimately, I'm part of a group of people now who will sit down and, you know, I won't obviously have any of the ultimate decision-making power. And I think that's right. That's not for me to have, you know, I'm walking away, you know. So, but I think for me, it would be somebody who has a more total view rather than first team only. And I think certain clubs look at it different ways. Certain clubs, the sporting director is basically a head of recruitment and that's all they're bothered about. And they let the academy director do his thing. For me, I think where we are in the region as well, it needs somebody who is prepared to work within the region, believe in the youth, believe in the region, and obviously be good around the first team.
If you look at Mick Priest's second era in Start, I think especially the first summer where the club was in a position where there were a huge possibility to go down to the second division. That summer, I think you made some really, really good signings. And also, of course, it's a teamwork, but under your time here, you got the promotion to the Elite Serien that people have been waiting for since 2020. When you leave now, what will you say is the best things that you have done for this club?
I think if you remember probably the first interviews we did, the one thing I talked about was trying to bring some pride back into the region, not just the club. And so I'd like to think there's a little bit more pride in the club, you know, from where we were that August when we walked in, because it was coming on the back of a really tough winter. You know, obviously the playoff game and the heating and everything. And so in terms of personal pride, I think there's obviously the promotion has to sit right up there because it was unexpected as well. You know, the group of people in the club, and it wasn't just the players or the staff, it was the whole club came together and worked hard. But I like the 4 16-year-olds got debuts last year in competitive games. If you watch our academy teams now, there's some good players coming through. We have made, you know, steps into the region. So I think there's a whole thing that makes me quite happy that, you know, from walking through the door to walking out of the door, you know, I have made probably a positive impact in different areas.
And if you look at it from the other side, what kind of things do you feel have been the most challenging in your role?
I suppose the biggest challenge is always the first team, because that's where the most conversations are around. With the academy, you can do your work and you can have your plans and you can work underneath the radar.
And you can work in peace.
Yeah.
No pressure.
That's it, yeah. There's a different pressure because we want players. You know, we want players who are good enough for us and for the first team. But obviously the challenges are always around the first team because everybody's an expert. You know, myself included, I go home and I watch Manchester United and I don't agree with everything that's been going on. And you think you know everything, but you don't because you haven't got the context of what's actually been going on inside the building. So those are always the challenges, but they're the challenges that make the game great, because if it's not in a game about opinions, then there's nobody coming into the stadium.
We're not sitting here.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I think, no, the challenges are nice. Listen, we wake up every morning to talk about or watch football. You know, and, you know, so that they are challenges, but they're nice challenges, let's be honest. When we're all growing up kicking a ball about when you're 6 and 7, you're not thinking about it being a job. It's just you're there for a bit of fun. And I've been very fortunate. I've worked in football for nearly 30 years professionally. And, you know, there's been very, very few mornings where I've not wanted to go to work. You know, and so as bad as some days you might think when you get beaten and you wake up the morning after and you want to completely change the squad and the lineup and the whole thing, then you breathe again and you realize it's one game.
We will speak more with you about this coming season and other topics in and around the club, but let's move back to what happened on Friday, and this part we will take in Norwegian if it's
not the whole of it.
Not the whole of it. Not the whole, but most of it, so it's more easier for our listeners to understand everything that Daniel wants to say. Og Daniel på fredag, også, som jeg sa til Asa Karadas i intervjuet etter kampen, jeg tror alle forsto før kampen mot Viking at dette kom til å bli mest sannsynlig vinterens tøffeste test, og det ble det 0-4. Hvordan vil du oppsummere den prestasjonen til start egentlig?
Nei, først kan du analysere hvor... jeg tenker vi kan ta første delen på engelsk her, sånn, siden Mick først her, og så kan vi bare ta akkurat gjennomgangen av målene på norsk. Men I would just say that if you take the context, you're meeting the reigning champions. Mm-hmm. You're meeting the reigning champions in a mode in that club which is perfect. They play almost all their best players. And they beat Bodø/Glimt. They had almost a record high points tally last season, so they were excellent. And they have all their star players, except Joe Bell and maybe Haugen on left back. They have all their best players. So compared to last season, when Start was almost the finalized product, staying with their best team, playing against Viking with maybe 5 players from the starting lineup and 6 rotation players, this is a completely different side of it. And when you also see that Start are without most of their spine from last season, you have Prytz in goal, he is not there. You have Sivert Sira Hansen sold. You have Jon Olav Nordheim injured. You have Markus Sumitz on the bench. You have Eirik Schulze injured. And the new signing up top is not available because of injury. So if you take the context, you would expect Viking to beat Start by 3 or 4 goals. So with that in mind, I'm not worried at all. If you just zoom out and see what can you expect from a game like this. But obviously, when you first come there, you want to be better than Start was. And I think both the players and the staff afterwards was kind of shell-shocked with what have hit them, because they've played in the Obos-League for 5 years, and this is a new level. This is Europa League. This is Champions League level. This is not Obos. What's your immediate thoughts after the game?
No, I think you're spot on. I think rather get this now and focus the minds a little bit and recognise they're the champions. They're the champions for a reason. You know, and in flashes on the game on Friday, they showed that. And that's the benchmark for the whole league, not just for us. You know, even Bodø/Glimt have got to catch them. You know, and so it was an eye-opener, because of the speed they move the ball with. And again, the little mistakes that you get away with in the Obos, you get punished heavily. Because even if they don't score, you don't see the ball for 3 or 4 minutes. You know, and they're moving you and they're wearing you out. And, you know, so they're good. You know, and they were a surprise maybe last year to some, that the fact that they got over the line. But this year now, they look really hungry again to prove that it wasn't a one-off.
And but I think where people could be critical or sceptical with their rights to do that is if you see the quality of the first 11 last year, which nobody expected to go to Eliteserien, and you see the first 11 that you put out on Friday, of course they have to work. Of course they have. There's a new group that has to gel and everything. But I would say that... there will be questions until proven otherwise that is this team good enough for, is it better than it was against Lyn in November? I'm not sure. What do you think?
You're killing me here, Daniel. No, listen, it's early days. The players are on a periodization program, as you know. So different levels of where people are in the fitness. But also you alluded to it, you know, we had our hands tied with some of the players who were missing. You know, that's part of football. You've got to adapt to those players being missing. So, and no, we've got a challenge on. You know, but let's be honest, we're not challenging Viking. You know, we're, our goal isn't to catch Viking. It'd be nice, but our goal is to finish 13th and anything above that. You know, and so that's our immediate challenge, is to be ready for that. The game on the 15th of March, that's the one we've got to be ready for.
But tell us about, because the market now, I think Christopher Tønnesen, it is obvious that he comes in at left and slots, he will slot straight in. He's Eliteserien quality. But in total, because you lost Sivert, then, and when Jonna is out, then the back three is more fragile now than it was in November. That's just a matter of fact, because you've lost two of them. So that needs time. But how difficult, because everybody wants, couldn't you just sign three players that would go straight in, be Eliteserien quality? And of course, it's early to say about Gurendal, it's early to say about Diallo or Meyer or Cornelius, but how difficult is it to operate in a market where you need proven Eliteserien quality, but it costs?
Yeah, well, I think that's the key. It's, there's been a massive jump this year in the market, and clubs are paying astronomical amounts based on what's gone on in the last couple of years. And the market has gone way inflated, which means wages have gone way inflated. And we have a duty to the club. As you guys both know better than me, the club's been in a cycle of boom and bust. And what we've got to be is competitive within our budget. And that's what we'll try and do. We will try and be creative with it. Not in a stupid way, as in, you know, oh, let's go and sign him because he's blah, blah, blah. But we will try and fit within our budget something that fits our ethos, which has always been the team. If you think back last year even, we were probably a squad with, there were four or five clubs in that Obus League with what you would call deeper squads. But they didn't have our unity. They didn't have our work ethic, they didn't have our togetherness, they didn't have our game plans. So, and that's where we're going to have to be this year. We're going to have to elevate all that stuff again that worked last year. We're going to have to elevate that to a different level, because financially we can't compete. You know, that's just facts.
But which club can you compete with? Because HamKam, Kristiansund, Koffa, are they also way off, or are Start more in the segment of finances with those clubs?
Now we're around there, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But you know, they're all making different moves, because they're what you would call established as well. So their squads are more settled around what they need and what they've viewed they need in the Eliteserien.
Mm.
So they've got that advantage over us as well. Is their changes maybe are more about evolving the group that they've got, whereas ours is also about trying to catch up before we evolve.
And also, you just need to, you have to gamble that Tom Stranegård, Lorentzen, Schulze, Uglan, players like that just makes the level, makes the step. You can't, because you can't bring in 21 new players. You just, sometimes you just have to trust that some of the guys just take the next level.
I think that's what, if you remember my last spell here, my first spell here, and that's that winter when we went up, and we brought probably about 14 new faces in. And that had the complete opposite effect, because it destroyed a dressing room. So we've had lots of conversations around what were our strengths last year and making sure we keep them. And one of the strengths was the group. And the group at times self-polices. So it allows Azar and his staff to get on with working. And too many changes can backfire as well. Maybe not enough changes will backfire. Who knows? Only time will tell on that one. But the one thing we've tried to do is really, really keep our strength, which is the group of good people, hard-working guys who work for each other. And we've taken great care to bring in good people as well. You know, we've really hit the references on whether somebody comes in and is a good fit for the group and a good fit for the city. You know, you've all seen players who come in and they've got fantastic ability, but they destroy the dressing room. And that can be as damaging as not bringing somebody in. So it's not an exact science, and only time will tell whether we've got close to getting anywhere near the exact science right. But no, I think we're very, very aware of the previous cycles the club's been in, where it's put itself at risk because too much has been spent on the wrong areas. You know, like I said, we've supported the academy. The academy will come through. That doesn't affect the first team, obviously, and the first team's job this year is just staying up. How we do it, who cares? You know, that's the primary aim this year.
But how do you view that? Because last year, even though you gave some chances to young people, young players, and Lukas Gaustal had a lot of playing minutes, still Start was one of the oldest teams in the Obus. And this year as well, there's not a lot of young players who are on the brink of, like, very, very close to breaking into the first team. And that's normal because you have to make one step up, et cetera, et cetera. But when is it realistic to hope for a kind of a shift where Start is where Viking is now, where they can bring one player in every year from the academy? Because now Start boys 16 last year in the top of Norwegian football. So you would think that when they are 18, 17, 18, 19, that you would see some of them coming into the first team.
Yeah, I think the difficulty in any club in the world is the timing. And it's always easier to drop a boy in from strength than into a war where everything's a fight. And you know what it's like, Daniel, when things are going not so well, players are selfish, everybody goes into a little bit of self-preservation mode as well. So it's harder to bring a youngster in when things are a war all the time. But having said that, if the player's ready, he'll play. You know, and that's, but the gap has gone.
Mm.
The gap from 17-year-old, 16-year-old to Obus League, now to Elite Serien, it is a gap. As you know, you've played at both. So there's a significant distance that they've got to catch up. But we've got some fantastic coaches at the club in the academy working hard. You know, and Hazard gives them a chance. They're in training every day, as you see. You know, so they will close the gap. It's just, can we get the timing right to put them in and not hurt them? Because a player's career can be hurt just as easily as it can be helped.
But like you have communicated, not only you, but other people in the club as well, that the ultimate goal this season is to keep a safe place in Eliteserien. Do you think that goal also will make it a bit more difficult to give the youngsters a chance?
I understand. Yeah, in theory, yeah. Because when the ultimate aim is of a certain level, it can be a safety first attitude as well, which can fall into things. Whereas right now, you know, we haven't got that. Our motto within the group is think forward, look forward, play forward. It's all about being on the front foot and being aggressive and not going into your shell. Because if we think we're going to go into the top division and just defend for our lives for 90 minutes for 30 games, then we might as well give somebody else our place.
Yeah, but it has been a shift. Like, if you see this season, Diallo is young. Mm-hmm. Meyer is quite young. Cornelius is quite young. Kutch Eriksen is quite young.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you're not signing 16-year-olds, you're signing players with potential of developing and selling with long contracts. When you came in and did the first thing you had to do in August of 2024, it was stabilizing. So then you had to bring in Vossager, Griesbeck, and so
Shala.
On. Yeah, because you needed to just...
Yeah, we need some men.
Grown men.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's what could be the issue this year, like he's saying that, okay, if the club, it's a gap of 20 million kroners just for 1 year in Eliteserien versus Obos, which choices do the coach take in September, in October, in November, when the important points are? It's much easier if you're high up the table, like Viking, to face them in when you're doing really well than if you're struggling. So I kind of understand, but still, it's a bit depressing as well, because if you look at Start's history, every time they really had a generation that has made some of the proudest moments in the club's history, it's been because the club has been bankrupt and had to bring in up the young players, and then they have gotten the time. So it's what comes first.
We hope now, as I've said, that we can bring them in, but from a position of relative strength, you know, and it's the greatest manager I've ever come across, Sir Alex, always used to say, young players will surprise you, and some will take to it, you know, and but they'll only take to it if they get looked after. You know, we haven't got a class of 92 where you're going to drop five or six in all at the same time, but we might have the one or two who can come in at different stages in the season from a position of relative strength, you know, and start to grow. But I mean, you mentioned Usman, you mentioned Jesper and Johan and the others, Alexander. We have made a conscious effort to get more in and around that sort of 21 to 24-year-old group, because we were aware, obviously, we had a job to do. We were top-heavy in terms of experience. You know, you can never have too much of it, but you do need to be ready to regenerate as well. And so that's where we've been an eye heavily on. But still, in bringing Ireland back as well, we've brought some experience back again, who knows the league, knows the club, you know, knows the demands. And so it's not an exact science, and, you know, it only gets easy when you've got a pot full of money to spend.
Yeah, because both of those players that you signed outside that segment that you mentioned, they were also free agents and local players with huge experience from the elite setting in Tønnesen and Segberg.
Yep.
So they will also help in also taking care of the younger players, setting the standards in the training sessions, yep, knowing what it takes to be successful in elite setting.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Young guys need role models, you know, and they have to have people with good experience, but with people with good habits, like you say. And so, I mean, I've known Ireland a long time, you know, so you absolutely know what you're getting with Ireland. I don't know Christopher, but I know enough about him through speaking with other people that he is, you know, consummate professional. He's going to do everything right. He will help others. And then when you're just watching the training and you're watching him around the building and how he presents himself and how he carries himself, yeah, that's going to rub off on others. And so, like I said, we've tried to bring good footballers in. We're trying to bring good people as well, because the academy players who step up have to understand that, yeah, Christopher or Ireland or Marcus, they're the benchmark in terms of how you prepare yourself as well. And so things like that, they do play a big part. And especially, as we've said, where you're operating on a limited budget, you know, so in those aspects, you have to be more certain, I think, that you're getting the right fit as a person rather than the footballer as well. You know, and so, you know, I think we know we're stronger than we were last year. Without a shadow of a doubt, I believe we're stronger than we were last year when everybody's fit. You know, and so let's get everybody fit. 15th of March, let's attack the league.
Vi skulle egentlig prate om vikingkampen, Daniel, men du har jo selv merket hvordan dette sporet litt av. Men bare for å få unnagjort den kampen, ja, fordi det en del andre ting vi vil prate med, ja, Mikko også om. Kan ikke du bare dra oss gjennom målet? Hva var dårlig med prestasjon? Og ikke minst, så du noe positivt man kan ta med seg fra opplevelsen på Lyse Arena?
Ja, Start begynner egentlig kampen på frontfoten. De presser høyt, de står høyt, de viser at ikke de kommer der med en ambisjon om å bare ligge lavt i en 5-3-2 gjennom hele kampen, for det vil ikke gå. Hvis du skal gjøre det i 30 kamper, så blir Start for lave, de blir presset bakover. Så det at de på en måte prøver å angripe kampen med å stå høyt, presse, få fram noen hjørnespark og så videre, synes jeg egentlig de begynte kampen ganske bra. Og så tenker jeg det noen ting å ta med seg her som er... Jeg hyllet jo Viking underveis i kampen for angrepsfotballen i sin og sa at blant annet et par målene var helt umulig å forsvare seg mot, det er bare toppkvalitet og så videre. Og så jeg intervjuet med Zlatko Tripic etterpå. Han snakket om hvordan de dro i startforsvaret sånn at de fikk åpne noen luker. Og der er det noen ganske interessante ting som vi kan gå gjennom. Så på mål nummer en, der er det litt sånn, det er personlig. Altså sånn, Kristoffer Tønnesen blir parkert på den siden, en mot en. Så blir det en ball som blir slått inn i boksen. Meier med en fryktelig klarering ned til Kristensen som legger han til Tripic, skudd i mål. Det er på en måte sånn, hva skal man si? Det er kvalitet, ja. Tønnesen blir parkert. Meier med en dårlig klarering. Men for meg så er det på en måte, det er sånn, man kan luke bort, i alle fall den klareringen til Meier. Der må han bare rolig få kontroll, enten få han mye lenger, eller dempe han. Han har tid til det også, så det er på en måte svagt forsvarsspill. Men Så har du mål nummer to, synes jeg kanskje det mest interessante målet i denne kampen her. Fordi at Start har rykket opp på grunn av defensiv soliditet. De ligger med en femmer, de ligger med tre stoppere inne sentralt, to wingbacker, og så har de en midtbanetrio foran som ligger og beskytter. Og hvis du ser hvordan de blir plukket fra hverandre på den 2-0-skåringen, det kanskje det mest bekymringsverdige med denne kampen her, på et vis. For at du kan bare ta hvordan Start er posisjonert. Ballen er ute til høyre på vikingside. Strandegård ligger ikke og dekker Tripic der ute, som gjør at venstre stopper Kristoffer Tønnesen, han allerede er ute og lukter på Tripic. Så allerede der har førstemann av de tre, som er inne og skal forsvare startsmål, er dratt ut av posisjon. Så allerede er Kristoffer Tønnesen mer eller mindre borte. Og det som da skjer når ballen går opp til Peter Kristiansen, som blir spilt opp av en back, han får ballen feilvendt, bruker riktig nok bare ett touch, så har han da, for de har tre mann posisjonert rundt Grisbekk der inne i Viking, de har to indre løper og en spiss som ligger og pusher, som gjør at de allerede er overtall der inne når Kristoffer Tønnesen er dratt ut. Det som skjer da, det er at når Grisbekk støter ut på Peter Kristiansen, da er to av tre borte. Når han da flikker ballen ut til Zlatko Tripic til høyre, som da Tønnesen er liksom in the middle of nowhere der ute, så har du altså Kristoffer Tønnesen, venstre topper, helt ut av boksen, Grisbekk også ute, og da er det kun en mann igjen, det er høyre stopper Meier. Han må da følge løpet til Peter Kristiansen inn i boksen, som gjør at alle tre startstoppere er foran første stolpe, og hele den zona som egentlig denne gjengen her skal beskytte, som er foran målet, der er det tomt. Det er et svært hull igjen i forsvaret. Og da kunne de jo tenkt, ja, Mboe eller Segberg er nødt til å følge det løpet til Kvia Egeskog inn i boksen. Det er jo selvfølgelig optimalt her om de hadde gjort det, men Start kan ikke forsvare seg på en måte som gjør at de står igjen med 0 av 3 stopper inne foran egen mål. Det er faktisk ikke mulig. Da kommer du til å bli så avkledd i denne ligaen, og jeg håper jo og tror at når du får Jon Olav Nordheim der inne, som på en måte kan styre og dirigere og på en måte finne ut av hvem som skal plukke opp løp, at det kan hjelpe. Men her blir altså Start, ja, det er glimrende spill av Viking, og det finnes noen korreksjoner her. La oss si at det blir jo en følgefeil, ikke sant? Hvis Strandegård står der bredt, så blir ikke Tønnesen dratt ut, og så blir ikke Grisbekk dratt ut, og så blir ikke Meier dratt ut, så er egentlig alt på en måte kanskje ok. Men det var bare en sånn fascinerende måte å bare se hvordan det bare følte etter hverandre, en sånn følgefeil hvor 1, 2, 3 forsvinner ut, og så står Kvia Egeskog foran mål helt alene, duff, inn 2-0, fantastisk angrepsfotball, men i en 5-3-2-formasjon, det kan ikke skje. Det kan ikke skje.
For å sitere Fredrik Pålerud etter kampen, dette ble jo rett og slett litt brutalt.
Det var brutalt. Og så har du mål nummer tre, det er mer på verdensklasse, altså det er det bare sånn, det er en ball bak i banen, Tripic ser ut som Dani Alves, det ser ut som det er Xavi til Dani Alves til Pedro, i gamle Barcelona 2011, fordi at kvaliteten på passning gjennom, timing på løp inn i bakom fra Tripic, kvaliteten på cutoveren, altså innlegget på ett touch inn foran mål, kvaliteten på sprinten til Peter Kristiansen for å komme foran Grisbekk der inne, det er verdensklasse. Så den er på en måte litt sånn, den synes jeg vi kan legge i en skuff og si gratulerer Viking, fantastisk angrepsfotball, men de andre målene, det er mer, sånn som mål nummer to, det er mer sånn, det kan du faktisk gjøre noe med, og du må strukturere det på en annen måte for å kunne håndtere det. Mål fire, den er jo mer sånn, litt flau, fordi at det er et kjapt hjørnespark hvor Start står inne, Segberg blir på en måte ropt ut av Tønnesen der inne, ser vi, men han er alt for sent ute. Hvis Segberg har tatt det steget ut 2 sekunder tidligere, så blir aldri det et mål. Bra gjort av Fuglestad og så videre, men det er sånne ting de enkelt kan korrigere. Det jeg tenker med mål nummer to, hvor når de blir plukket fra hverandre der, da ble jeg litt sånn, åja, wow. Det var faktisk ganske fascinerende å se hvordan tre midtstopper allerede er foran første stolpe.
Men hvordan bruker man en sånn prestasjon i fortsettelsen nå i vinter?
Nei, jeg håper at de viser det klippet på 2-0. Nå er ikke jeg noe taktisk geni, men av og til så skjønner man faktisk hva som har skjedd. Og i den situasjonen så håper jeg at de prater sammen, finner ut av hva er løsningen her. Ok, vi må ha Strandegård bredere. Vi må holde trioen samlet mer inne sentralt, slik at de ikke vil bli dratt ut på den måten der. Så jeg håper at de går gjennom sånne bilder, og ikke bare sier at, og det kommer de ikke til å gjøre. De kommer ikke til å si at, ah, Viking var bare helt fantastiske, her er vi ferdige. De må jo gå gjennom disse tingene og si, hva kan vi faktisk gjøre for å korrigere? Og det synes jeg var sånn, åpenbart at dette er videomateriale for Asa Karadas og gjengene å gå gjennom. Her, sånn kan vi ikke opptrå i egen boks, rett og slett.
Og så må vi jo bare si et par ord om Zlatko Tripic, også som har blitt en vikinglegende og kongen av Stavanger med det seriegullet som kom i fjor. Vi står jo og intervjuer spillere etter hver eneste kamp, Daniel, men noen spillere gjør faktisk et større inntrykk på deg enn andre. Jeg husker for eksempel da Start hadde Vito Wormgård. Han var kanskje ikke den som presterte best på banen og var litt over det topp, men du bare merket at hver gang han pratet så lyttet du til det han hadde å si, fordi det var masse ord, men det var også hold i det han sa, og en slags dybde, og jeg føler det akkurat sånn hver gang man prater med Zlatko Tripic også, at det er veldig lett å få respekt for han og det han sier, og han er jo glad for at Start er tilbake i Eliteserien, men han kom jo også med en liten advarsel da, om at dette var en kakk i hælen, og at nå fikk det en sånn wake-up call, fordi det er dette som kreves i Eliteserien.
Jeg synes han er den mest interessante mannen å snakke med i norsk fotball, og det er fordi at han er for det første kanskje den beste spilleren i norsk fotball. Han har rutine, han har opplevd det meste, han har sett alt. Han er en helt fantastisk spiller, både fysisk, taktisk og teknisk, og du så det igjen, altså to målgivende, ett mål. Han er bare pur klasse, den mannen der. Kommer til å fortsette å herje i Eliteserien, og har nå omstilt seg fra å være en venstrekant, innoverkant, til å igjen bli høyrekant og en innleggskant mer enn han var tidligere. Så utrolig imponerende hvordan han tilpasser seg. Og, som du sier, når han snakker, så lytter du. Start fikk seg en killevink, og jeg tror han også på en måte reagert litt på at ikke Start har på en måte åpenbart styrket seg fra i fjor. Han synes vel ikke de så noe sterkere enn det de gjorde året før, og det kan være mange grunner til det, men at han var litt bekymret på Starts vegne, det er det ingen tvil om.
When you have a performance like this in a preseason friendly against Viking, of course it looks ugly when you lose 0-4, and it does not matter opponent. When you lose 0-4, it always looks ugly. But do you think this can be used as something positive moving forward?
No, 100%. You know, Azar and his staff went through the game. They've been going through it again. And you identify areas where you've got to get better. I always, when I was coaching them, you know, I used to look at it as, what would the next opposition coach be looking at? Because that sort of tells you a little bit about, right, that's where they're going to see a weakness. So that's something we've got to identify as well. So you can take it as a learning tool. You know, instead of stamping your feet and getting upset, every day is a learning day, you know, and we get closer to fixing things, because immediately it was clear that Viking played to their strengths really well. You know, they, once they got the ball and we'd given them chances to get into a rhythm, they were a really tough team to deal with, and they pulled you apart, and that's where the concentration starts to struggle, because you're getting tired and you're moving and those gaps start to appear, and somebody maybe just releases half a second too late, which means that there's a little 1-2 can be played, and so all that kind of stuff is the learning tools from the game.
And also I think Start made, because we've talked about earlier the problem with 5-3-2. The problem is that if the wingbacks get too low,
yep,
then the distances for the trio in the middle is too long. So for Erlend Seiberg on the right and for Mikael Uglan on the left, it becomes, you always slide from side to side, yep, but you never really get to put, yep, pressure on. Yep. So what we've noticed in the second half is that they more shifted to a 5-4-1,
yep,
to more like could put pressure on the side. So that's one way of doing it. On the other hand, the problem with that is that you give something as well, because, yep, you only have a front one.
Yeah.
So one of Start's way of succeeding last year was when you have always a front two, then you have something to play up against, yep, when you win the ball. But when you 5-4-1, it's sometimes quite difficult to.
Yeah, it's hard for the man up top, because he can't get everywhere. But I think as well where we have to look at the game, and we started okay. Daniel gave it 7 minutes, I gave us 9. But we started positively. And for those early minutes, we were brave on the ball. And we've got to be brave on the ball, you know, because it's a long game without it. And so when we do have it, we do have good possession, the players have got to believe in themselves as well, you know, and trust each other, that we can play the little one-touch football and move people about. And that's another part of the evolution of the group, you know, trusting each other to give the ball to somebody in tight area and get it back just to be able to move the opposition. And that's what Viking did really well. You know, they would play a ball to a man under pressure, knowing that when he gives it back, somebody else has now moved. And that's where we've got to evolve to as well. Because if our sole focus becomes just defending, we're in for a long year. We won't succeed that way. We've got to believe in our strengths and play to them. But then when we're in the opposition half, have the belief to play.
Yeah, and because that what you have to realize in modern football is that you will never control 90 minutes of a game. That's impossible. No team can do that on any level. So what you have to do is that you have to make your good periods a bit longer. Mm-hmm. So because, like you say, if you have to defend for 83 minutes or 81 minutes, then suddenly a lapse in concentration will occur. But if you give yourself 9 minutes good there, and then they have 15 minutes, and then you were able to have another period, then it's suddenly it's half time.
Yeah.
So then they will not be 3-0 up at halftime, maybe 1-0 instead, because they have quality and stuff. But you have to make sure that you don't give them the easy way to just get a stranglehold on you. And I would say that what I see that's frustrated me in the first half, before the first goal as well, was you start to play backwards, goalkeeper long.
Yeah.
And that's just not the way to do it, because Falkner, every centre-back in Eliteserien will love that. Because just like we love it when Jon Olav Nordheim and Sivert Sia Hansen can just jump up and win all their duels. It's the same for every team in Eliteserien. So if you just go backwards, long, then you will never be able to challenge the teams. You have to play in the between them, mm-hmm. and maybe sometimes go back. But I just feel that every time the ball goes back, then you 8 out of 10, you will lose it 5 seconds later.
And I think that's a belief system as well. You know, you've watched the training. Hazard doesn't encourage players to play backwards. He wants players to play in tight areas, and they work on the patterns of play that allow us to play. But all of a sudden, when somebody's closing you down quickly and putting you under pressure, that little bit of safety first comes in. And like you said, Daniel, backwards, because I don't want to be the one to make the mistake. Whereas the top players don't think the word mistake. They think, I'm going to be the one who creates that opportunity. And that's where we've just got to get comfortable at the level as well. Because not everybody's Viking. You know, and so they are an exceptional group. If you look at them athletically, they've moved on. Even from when I joined him in August 2024, the level of the Eliteserien has gone up physically. So we've got to get there as well as all the other stuff. And so Viking at a benchmark, Bodø/Glimt at a benchmark, but we've got to be brave to go and play with them. You know, otherwise, if we're not going to be brave, there's no point going up.
No, and like I said in Norwegian earlier, that's solidity that's really was the benchmark for Asa's team last season was the solidity in the back as well, so that you were able to sustain pressure for 20 minutes and then come back into the game. So that's where you have to fix the easy stuff, mm-hmm. by being, because you see, like in the Premier League as well, if Everton comes to City or Arsenal and plays a 5-4-1, it's difficult for any team in the world to play. So I didn't fear that Start were able in this game, even though they're a better side, you should make it more difficult for them to pull you to pieces.
Yeah, I think as well, right now we're in that building stage where people are building relationships.
Mm.
Like you mentioned, I understood enough Norwegian to get that you're talking about a complete, basically, new back three, centre-backs. You know, and so they're building relationships. Johan and Paula have got to get a relationship. Christopher and Tom have got to get a relationship so that Christopher knows when he can pull him back, when he can let him go. All those things are going to take a little bit of time, and that's what pre-season's for. You know, and we've got to get those. And the guys in the team have got to take responsibility as well. And they can't be so nice with each other that they're afraid to tell each other in a strong way. But then when you walk off the pitch, it's done. You know, it's a job.
One last thing as well is that as a team, because Fredrik Paulrud is a professional, solid player who did a really good season last season. But when you're playing against the 15 million euro players, even Edvin Østbø on the left side, He's so quick. You don't meet anybody of that quality in Obosliga. Nowhere near it.
Ikke Obosliga, nei.
Or Elite. Or Elite Serien. It's just another level. It's Premier League level on the way he moves, how quickly he shifts the ball from side to side. And if you see a player with that speed, then they have some very clear weakness as well. Like they don't play the ball at the right time, or they don't start when they should start, or they don't deliver the cross. But to see such a complete player, it's amazing. That was kind of my highlight of watching this game. Was like, wow, this is like real, real quality. So then Start needs to, okay, when they then have Meyer and Polaru, they have to do something different. They can't let him play against him 10 times 1v1 and let him just run into the box. Then the team has to correct it. They have to do it more difficult for Østbø to challenge 1v1. So that was also a learning thing, because I think last year, in most games, they were able to handle the 1v1 situation.
There was only a Noah Williams, maybe. Who.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, in the old bus, you can stop the ball at source. You stop the ball going out there easier. Whereas here in their midfield, they've got the quality to pop it about to free that pass a lot quicker and a lot easier. So, you know, we've got to learn, but we are up against better players and better teams. And that's the challenge and the exciting bit. And the other area we've got to be better at is our set pieces. You know, it's an important part of the game. And we've got to make sure that we work those well.
But that's also, like you say, for everybody that's played football, it's not the same thing to just be good in the duels and to be dangerous at set pieces. So I think the qualities of Norheim, the qualities of Sira Hansen, the qualities of Schulze, you can't just tell the next guy to do like him, because it's a skill like everything else in football. So I think first and foremost, you will be stronger from set pieces when Norheim is back and when Schulze is back. And also, of course, the others can learn. But I think that it's so important that Start becomes a team that's good at set pieces, because that's a part of the modern game as well, that you need to have those margins.
And it's something you can control.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be brave enough to have that little bit of creativity as well. You know, because otherwise, as we've talked about previously on this, the centre-backs and the defenders in the Elite Serien love a ball in the air where they can just come and power through it. So can we move people out of position to create space for somebody else to come in? You saw United's goal at the weekend. Clever little corner. United have never done clever little corners. You know, but they scored from it because they had the creativity and the quality.
And the practice.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a huge believer in set pieces. Always have been. You know, if you think about the world stats, that around 30% of all goals are scored from set pieces, and yet we give them about 6 minutes a week. You know, and that's, for me, you know, we should. Every coach, not just Hazard and his coaching staff, every coach, you look at Arsenal, you can tell that they work them. You know, and for me, it's a huge part of the game. When a third of the goals are scored from a certain situation, you need to dedicate more
which
time
you
to
can
it.
Control.
Exactly. You know,
Arsenal don't just work with them. It's the only thing they are good at. It's the set pieces.
But listen, the top of the league because of them.
Yeah, there's only one team actually that's more efficient from set pieces in the Premier League than Arsenal, and it's United.
Yeah. And United have never been good at set pieces. But I think the whole thing, because as well, set pieces against is vital as well.
You know, that's why, like, it's not dangerous that it happens in February, but like the fourth goal, that should be like up on there. Mm-hmm. Never again this season. Never again, because we can't be caught out on such, when we are underdog.
Yeah.
You can't be caught out on the easy things.
Yeah, the basics.
That's easy.
The basics have got to be done absolutely to the best of your ability. And things that involve thinking and effort have got to be done automatically.
Mm.
You know, and like you said, but let's take the wake-up call now, you know, and let's move forward. We've got a good game coming up this week. You know, with Lean, good test for us. You know, because they're competitive, physical. You know, they'll be ready for us. You know, and so just another chance for relationships to build within the group.
And we have spoken a lot about the squad. It's still time left on the transfer market, which closes at the end of March. How much more activity do you expect it to be?
Well, I'm waiting for you to transfer that money over, Cheyenne, that you promised me.
Which money?
That 2 million knock that you said I could have.
Knock?
Yeah, no.
When did I say that?
Oh, in your dreams. No. Listen, it's things will still happen in the market. You know what will happen. Somebody, a bigger club will sign somebody, which will mean a squad, a player who was a starter becomes a squad player, becomes unhappy, a squad player becomes further down the list and becomes even less of a rotation player. And so that's where...
That's where you come in.
Yeah. No, yeah, and that's where, yeah, that's where we've got to be realistic. Whether that be a loan, whether that be a permanent transfer. But the other thing is we've got to try and get some people out as well, because we've got quite a heavy group in terms of numbers, and some won't play. You know, and so for their careers as well as for us as a club, it would benefit to move some people out. But also there's got to be some takers. You know, if you think back to the group that we had last year and the absolute outstanding result that we had with promotion, it's probably a little bit unexpected. So, because we'd almost built a squad ready for promotion this year. Mm. So then you've got a group that you know that there's one or two who won't be able to come on the journey with you, but you need to be able to replace them. But also then it comes to the fact that, well, who in the Obus League can afford to buy them, or who could afford to pay the salaries that we've put them on? You know, and see, we're then in that fine little game of, you know, we know we need to strengthen again, and we'd love to be able to bring certainly one or two more in, you know, to add the level of competition. But if it's not out there, we won't force it and make it a wrong decision.
When it comes to players coming in, I guess it's possibly have something to do with the striker situation as well, because we mentioned that Jesper Cornelius did not train before the weekend game. Do you have any news on his injury?
No, he went for a scan over the weekend, so we're just waiting the results. Before we came on, I'd checked in with Hazard and we'd still not had a result yet. So I saw Jesper on Saturday afternoon, just before the game at home, for the second team, and he said he was feeling okay. He had the boot on, but feeling okay is different than a scan result. So, but whereas earlier in the week he was in significant pain just moving, he said he was feeling much better. So, touch wood, the outcome is not as long as maybe, you know, the worst fears could be.
We have I'm going to give a short like analysis of what's been happening since Mick arrived. Okay, so the team is on the brink of relegation to the PostNord, right? 1.5 year later, in Eliteserien, you have strengthened the relationship with the clubs West, MK and Lyngdal, made an agreement with them, and now Arendal. And more money is spent on youth development. So there's a lot of clear positives here. But when it comes to where you and the sporting committee has gotten the most criticism is the striker situation. And signing strikers, the amount of strikers that's been signed in position, out of position, playing as a striker and stuff. Can you tell us about what is it with striker signings that's so difficult?
Well,
or is it difficult?
No, it is difficult, yeah.
And why is it difficult? More difficult than anything else?
Because the ones that you want, we can't afford. So that you go into a market where you trust, you've got trusted people who recommend people to you as well. Obviously, we were working with James Sam last year, so we were guided by them. And some worked, some didn't. You know, not just in terms of the striker position, you know, other players. But it's the hardest thing in the game, isn't it? Put the ball in the net. And if there's different types of striker, we had Matthias, for example, who was the pressing and went on a run of goal scoring that was probably unexpected, you know, but then you lose those goals and you think, well, you know, we'll bring somebody in who's got a proven goal scoring record. And that didn't quite take in Norwegian football. You know, Emmanuel, for example, came really, really strongly recommended, you know, from people who've had fantastic success placing players from West Africa into European clubs. And when they're putting the name to them and saying he will succeed for you, and, you know, sometimes it's you take that gamble and it didn't work. But ultimately, in terms of strikers, generally, that's where the money is. And that's the challenge, is to have enough money to get the right person in.
Yeah, because that's what we've been debating for the last couple of years, is when Start loaned strikers, they had a much higher success rate. And that's mm-hmm. quite natural if you think about it, yeah. because if the club who owns them really, really believe in them, then they won't sell them. So like Skogvold, yeah. like Braut Brunes, for example, if they were not very good, then the clubs would release them.
Yep.
So you would have them, you could buy them. But since they know that they're really good, then you have to loan them. Yeah. So it's kind of a, I don't know what to call it, catch 22 or what you call it. It's difficult.
It is. And there's some people we've inquired about through the winter, and you just immediately out of the market because of the signing fee, the transfer fee. Because then you think, I don't know, if you have to pay 5 million knock for somebody, you're adding a minimum 3 million of that minimum in terms of signing bonuses and salaries. And so that 5 million actually is closer to 8 or 9. You want to be certain that you're doing that on the right thing when we're still trying to build the rest of the squad is the challenge.
You know, the problem is when you're selling a player for like 12 mm-hmm. and you're buying one for 3, it's not 9 million in between there. It's yeah. probably 6,
yeah,
and 7.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's everybody will look and think, wow, we've got huge amounts of money to spend, you know, because we've sold one player, but there's still a club to run, you know, and that's the... So you're trying to make sure that you balance the immediate needs without going for broke and losing any ability to do anything else afterwards.
Do you think you're equipped now with the squad to survive, or do you think you need more?
Everybody always wants more. So I think we're okay. I think we'll compete. You know, I think we'll be competitive. We're not going to win the league, I'll tell you that. But if we do, then we're a Leicester City. But no, we'll be competitive because they'll be well coached, they'll be fit, they'll be strong, you know, and we will be involved in every game. We might get beaten in games, and well, we will get beaten in games, but it won't be because we are not with a good game plan. Won't be because the players are not giving everything. There will be at times a golfing quality like we saw against Viking. You know, you accept that. You know, it's we just got to work as hard as we can to become the best. And on an everyday basis, those strikers who people question about not scoring enough goals, they'll work in training and practice, you know, and hopefully take it to games. And we just keep working on everything that we do. We focus on every day, day by day by day by day. And if we can get better day by day, then hopefully you'll see improvements as the year goes on.
And also, I just want to talk about one player, because we haven't talked about players, because I think in the game against Viking, there was a lot of, like, they were just beaten in most positions. But I would like to say that Gurendal, I think he made a positive impact in that first half. I think he showed that courage to shoot, that courage to play forward, that to run forward, to try and create something. So I think that was quite a positive note from this game, that he looked like he could contribute in that centre-forward position, which is a position that he hasn't played a lot the last couple of years.
Yeah, Alexander's an exciting prospect. You know, you don't survive at a club like Valencia. even though he wasn't a success in their first team, you don't even get there if you've not got something. So we're hoping that we're the place where he can come back and restart himself a little bit. But like you say, he showed some flashes of sharp movement, moves well, good balance. And I love, like you said, Daniel, the bravery to take things on and shoot and take a chance to make be a hero. You know, far too many times now, nobody wants to be that hero. They'd rather not miss rather than score. So I think, no, I think he was positive. And he's got to get fit. He's not used to playing on turf anymore. So that's all taking a little toll on his body as well early on. So, but no, he was a positive.
And when it comes to the point that you made with being a well-coached team, we also must speak about that before we wrap this episode up. Last week, there came some good news about Joey Hardarson signing an extension of his contract. He now has a deal running out 2028, I believe. And right now, the assistant coach has a longer contract than the main man, Azar Karadas. Is it ongoing conversations with him about a new contract?
Yeah, we're talking with Azar's representative. You know, there's no immediate urgency. You know, Azar's focused on day to day. You know, and you know, we just keep working forwards. And you know, obviously they have a valuation. I have a valuation. The club has a valuation, and we'll at some point hopefully meet in a nice position where both of us get what we want.
Because he is also a name out in the market as well, because of what he did as a player and now as a coach, bringing Start up to the Eliteserien again. And we know that there are several clubs having him on a short list when they are considering appointing a new coach. Can you say something about how much the club wants him to continue here? Because now he has just 2 years left of his contract.
Yeah. No, I think it's obvious that if he carries on developing at the rate he's developing, then he's going to be on other clubs' radars. You know, he's, like you say, he's got a fantastic reputation around Norway as a player, as a coach, as a person. You know, and so he's going to be on people's radars. He'll also be on people's radars around Scandinavia, I would thought, not just within Norway, because it's quite a small, tight-knit football community in this area. And so, no, we value his work, you know, and we want him to continue. And so, you know, we'll just keep working towards coming to an amicable agreement. And then we'll let you all know and we can all smile.
And in the end of May, you will leave Kristiansand, go back to Manchester. Can you try to say something about how it is to say goodbye to the Start family for the second times? When you work in football, there are lots of ups and downs, but there is also a lot of goodbyes in this game.
Yeah, it's last week was emotional. I'm sure May will be emotional. You know, that last week. Right now, I'm okay. You know, it will be tough because football, apart from the football, I've met a lot of good people in the city. You know, there's a lot of nice people in Kristiansand. And so I've got friends through football, friends without a football, you know, and so that's going to be tough. But as you said, football is a game that moves you about. You know, I've spent 4 years, 5 years out of my working life overseas, you know, so I've enjoyed those challenges. But they bring different challenges, you know, and part of that is not being at home, you know. And so, yeah, it's going to be tough, but for the next couple of months, you know, I'll work to put things in place where whoever takes the role on, you know, has something to build on rather than start again.
And what will the future hold for you when you move back to the England? Are you working to find a new job, maybe closer to where you live, or are you going to take a break? Have you considered what you will do next?
No, I can't afford to take a break, Shane. No, I think part of the reason for saying now
it allows me the opportunity to start putting my name around at home and using the contacts. If I'd waited until May, knowing in the back of my mind that I was going anyway, to then work behind the club and be sneaky and not straight, I didn't think that was right. You know, so I'd rather, you know, we came to the decision, we spoke, and it was work towards the handover. But it now allows me to go on LinkedIn. It allows me to phone the agents and say, listen, if you hear of anything, it allows me to use my contacts to say, you know, if something's coming up, I'm available or I'm going to be, you know. And so it was just cleaner to allow me now to start making some phone calls as well, you know, and because, you know, football, there's no secrets. So if I'd have made a phone call, I don't know, pick a club. I'll pick Manchester United because I won't end up there. But so I phone somebody at Manchester United and then somebody phones somebody over here. All of a sudden, you guys are onto it. Oh, Mick's leaving. Well, why? You know, and it becomes a story that doesn't need to be. You know, this way, everything's great. I've had a fantastic backing from the board at the club here, the investment board. Everybody's backed me fantastically well. You know, and so it's... It just feels like the time.
We will speak more with Mick, of course, in the coming month, but we must also congratulate him with the work he has done since he came in here. We have been criticizing him. We have been praising him. We have not always agreed on everything, but you cannot hide from the fact that Mick has been a central part of a team that for the first time since 2020 will be playing in Eliteserien again, Daniel.
No doubt. So, and I've known him for soon to be 10 years now. So it's been a long time. The first time I met Mick was quite a brutal first impression. I've talked about it before, but he came in the 2017.
I just started swearing a lot.
So and now we had a good relationship from the start. So but and he was part of the promotion that we had that season. But I remember we had a trainings. Game in mid-season against Sandefjord, and I was just bringing some wax onto my hair because we just came from the hotel, so I thought I might look sharp, not spending a lot of time or anything, just putting some wax into my hair. And Mick's comment to me was, "You're not entering a beauty pageant. It's quite rough."
Yeah. He's right.
He's right.
And Mick, also once again, thank you for coming here today, even though the news about you not continuing been very fresh. And we also appreciate your time and wish you all the best for your future.
No, thank you. And you know, thank you for always being up front with me. You know, it's love-hate relationship, you know, but that's part of it. You know, our job is to want the best for the football club, and you guys want the best for the football club. We just sometimes have different ways to talk about it, but ultimately it's all with the aim of driving the club forwards. And no, I've enjoyed my time, enjoyed the relationships. Nice to get to know you, Cheyenne.
Thank you.
To get reacquainted with Daniel. And yeah, we're still going. We're still going. You've got 3 more months of my nonsense to listen to.
And after
plenty of time to ruin the friendship.
And yeah, after this, after these 3 months, I can guess that it will be a bit of a happiness for you to stop answering all my messages.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Will you get some peace?
I'm just going to block you.
No, don't do that.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Thank you. Skal vi runde av, Daniel? Ja. Takk for i dag.
Sendingen sponset av Coop. Litt ditt.